Born in 4 BC in Cordoba, Lucius Annaeus Seneca was a Roman philosopher who lived until 65 AD and is best known for his moral writings. He was a proponent of the Stoic school of philosophy and is regarded as one of its most significant figures. Contrary to the claim made, Marcus Aurelius was not the son of Seneca, but rather another Stoic philosopher who lived later. Seneca had a successful political career, serving as quaestor, praetor, senator, and consul under the reigns of Tiberius, Caligula, Claudius, and Nero. He was also Emperor Nero's tutor. Seneca was acquainted with 5 Roman emperors during his lifetime. He was renowned as an eloquent speaker and a significant figure in Roman politics. From 54 to 62 AD, he was among the most admired, powerful, and recognized senators. During the early years of his pupil Nero's reign, Seneca effectively co-managed the Roman Empire with Praetorian prefect Sextus Afranius Burrus. This position earned him many adversaries, and in 62 AD, he was compelled to retire from politics after being falsely implicated in the Pisonian conspiracy against Nero. The emperor subsequently sentenced him to death, and in 65 AD, the philosopher was forced to commit suicide. Seneca wrote extensively and was a major influence on Stoic philosophy. Epictetus, the slave, and Marcus Aurelius, the ruler, were 2 other great Stoic thinkers who came after him and made their own contributions. Though he died a long time ago, his lessons are still relevant today. They were especially important during the Renaissance, when he was held up as an exemplar of morality and virtue for people to emulate. Stoicism, with its strong moral foundation, teachings that are conveyed not only through words, but also by example, its encouragement of sobriety and peace of mind when confronted with external realities, and its advocacy for living in accordance with nature's laws, presents itself as a valuable approach to combating the ills of a society where values are often disregarded and personal interests pursue their objectives by any means necessary. Since anything associated with Stoic teachings has been viewed skeptically in the past, they stand out for their wisdom and simplicity. They also offer hope for a moral resurgence by demonstrating how to live a virtuous life. With their powerful, confident words, these venerable Roman philosophers can inspire us to believe in ourselves and in humanity, perhaps now more than ever. In today's world, it seems increasingly critical to revitalize the moral fabric of our society, including its objectives and practices. Given our recent tumultuous history, there's widespread concern about the future and a search for hope. In this context, Stoicism is once again becoming a topic of frequent discussion. Epictetus and Marcus Aurelius are 2 other Roman Stoic philosophers whose works are well known. Compared to theirs, Seneca's body of work is much more comprehensive, encompassing moral essays, letters, tragedies, and epigrams, which are brief, insightful poems inscribed on monuments or tombs. One of these works, which has likely reached many people and evoked a great deal of empathy, is his Dialogue on the Shortness of Life. It discusses the detrimental habits that lead us to waste time, without realizing that time is synonymous with life and without imbuing life with greater meaning that makes it worth living. These are practical and incisive reflections on human life. Anyone involved with time management techniques, which are crucial for balancing our responsibilities and needs, understands the value of Seneca's advice in this classic work. It serves as a foundation of observations and guidelines on how to take control of our time and use it wisely. Generally, all other advice can be applied after adhering to this fundamental guidance.
First chapter, Learning to Navigate Life.
You need to know how to navigate your life. Most people, O Paulinus, complain that nature is responsible for the brevity of our lives, arguing that the time allotted to us passes so swiftly that many die while still trying to live it. And it's not only the uninformed masses who lament this perceived injustice. Even the wise have voiced their frustrations, prompting scholars to remark that life is short, whereas knowledge is vast and sprawling. Aristotle noted that the debate over the lifespans of certain animals, which may extend to 500 years or more, as opposed to humans, who are ostensibly wiser and capable of greater feats, stems from this. In reality, we are not given a short amount of time, rather, we squander much of it. Life is sufficiently long to achieve great things if we utilize it effectively. However, if we devote our time to frivolity and laziness, neglecting meaningful endeavors, we will find that, upon reaching life's final moments, it has slipped away unnoticed. The only certainty about our lifespan is that we shorten it through our preoccupations. We do not lack time, rather, we have more than we realize. When vast and opulent wealth falls into the hands of the negligent, it vanishes in a moment. Conversely, modest and finite resources, when managed by the prudent, multiply with use. Thus, those who employ our era wisely possess abundant liberty. Anger is akin to an acid that corrodes the vessel it is stored in more than the surface on which it is poured. Chapter 2. Why do we whine about other people but not about ourselves? Nature was nice to us, so why do we worry about her? Life is long if you know how to enjoy it. Some people are held back by their insatiable greed for goods, while others are held back by their careful neglect of useless tasks. Some people are slowed down by their indolence, while others are worn out by their ambition, always waiting for other people's opinions, even if their unquenchable desire for goods with the hope of profit doesn't take them to faraway lands and seas. And still others are tormented by their desire to join the military, even though no one has ever warned them about it. Others spend their whole lives serving others because they don't respect their elders. Many are held back by wanting other people's wealth or hating their own. Still others are drawn by an unstable and constantly unhappy lightness that swings between different opinions. And finally, there are those who don't, which makes it clear that what the greatest poet said in the form of an oracle was true. A small part of life is the tear. Time's vices surround them everywhere, never letting them rise or look at the face of truth. Their desires hold them down and never let them return to themselves, and even if an unexpected stillness comes to them, they still move around. It seems like the waves are always moving back and forth, and no one ever tells them to stop. Do you think I'm only talking about people whose bad behavior is well known? If you look at other people, whose happiness many people seek, you will see that even they are crammed with their own stuff. How many people are irritated by their wealth? How many people have died because they wanted to show off their speech all the time? How many people have turned pale from their constant pleasures? How many people have never had a moment of freedom because their panderers were always around? So, go from the flattest to the steepest, and you'll see that one drowns, the other helps. One puts others in danger, this one protects, and the other sentences, one becoming a part of the other. If you look into the lives of these people whose names are honored, you will see that they know you by signs, that one of them is respected and the other is not. And none of them, which is ignorant of the anger of some who complain that the superiors are too eager to visit them when they don't find them free, went to see them. It's possible that those who don't have jobs are never free for themselves, so they have the nerve to call what might be lack of time pride. He looked at the other person, maybe you, the one who left, even though you had a serious look on your face. He may have heard you and accepted you into his group, but you have never bothered to look at or listen to him. There's no reason to make other people take on these responsibilities. You didn't really want to be with them when you went looking for them. You went because you couldn't be with yourself. There is no one who is less lucky than the man who is not tested by adversity. Chapter 3. Taking Stock. This is something that all the smartest people in history will agree on, but they won't be able to think about it deeply enough. No matter how small the difference in setting the borders is, they resort to stones and guns to keep people from taking their land. After that, they not only let other people into their lives, but they also choose who will have it. No one wants to give away their money, but many people are willing to give away their lives. They act unhappy when they are trying to keep their money safe, and when it comes to wasting time, they do a lot of things that would make greedy people happy. I'd like to call one of the old men, and since you are one, I'll choose you. You are at least 100 years old. Call your age to account and tell me how much of it the debt used up. How much does the friend? How much does the republic? How much do your family and friends cost? How much do you dislike your wife? How much do slaves get locked up? How much does it cost to walk quickly through the city? On top of that, you can get diseases from touching things. When you add up the time you idle, you'll see that you have a lot less than you think. Make yourself remember if you've ever been determined, and if you spent it on what you had planned to use it for. What good was it to be yourself when your face was in a living thing? When did your spirit not fear? What have you done for yourself in such a long time? How many people have taken your life without realizing what they took away? How long have pointless sadness, foolish happiness, greedy hunger, and fun talk been taken from you? You'll think that you died by bad luck when you see how little of yourself you still have. There are three tenses in life: present, past, and future. Today is very short, tomorrow is uncertain, and the past is certain. Augustus is in chapter 4. If you live as if you were going to live forever, your weakness won't bother you. What's the point? You don't notice how much time has gone by, so you live each day as if it were the last, because you think that the day you choose to do something will be the last day of your life. You used to be afraid of everything, but now that you're eternal, you want them. A lot of people say that they will retire to peace and quiet when they turn 50, and they will also say that they will retire from their jobs and workplaces when they turn 60. When you say this, what proof do you have that you will live longer? Who will agree to let you do what you want to do? Aren't you embarrassed to save the time that doesn't do anything for the virtue-oriented works of life? Or, how late is it to start living when you want to end it? What stupid disregard for death it is to put off getting holy counsel until you are 50 years old, when few people come of age. If you talk to many powerful people in high positions, you will hear them say that they desire peace and that they would compare it to all the things they want, if they could only bring it down from that height. Since there aren't any outside threats to fight, good luck falls by itself. Want to know what freedom means? Not being a slave to anything, not being a slave to any need or chance, and putting luck on fair terms. Cicero in chapter 5. It was said that the gods gave Augustus more gifts than anyone else. He was always looking for peace and asking to be freed from the Republic's duties. All of his talks were meant to keep him from resting and the sweet, if fake, comfort of thinking that one day he would live for himself kept him going. Although these things can be done with more glory than promised, he wrote in a letter to the Senate, promising that his rest would not mean losing his sense of self or going back to his old glory, but the happiness of having reached the goal. Time has moved me ahead so much that, even though the taste of good things is holding me back right now, the sweetness of these very important talks makes me feel better. He made all countries happy and saw everything as being tied to his will. He eagerly anticipated the day when he would no longer be that great. Having been forced to fight with his own people, Sicily, Egypt, Syria, and Asia, as well as almost all the other provinces to the orb, he had been forced to fight with the past armies of Roman mortality, while pacifying the Alps and taming the enemies mixed in peace and in the empire. He knew from experience how much sweat had cost him those goods that everywhere shine, and how much of hidden sorrows they contain. In Rome itself, Murena, Scipio, Lepidus, and Ignatius were sharpening their swords against him. He had just broken their spells when his own daughter and many fine young men, enticed by adultery as if by oath, scared him old and broken. After that, he still had a woman to fear. He cut off these spots again with Antonio, this time by cutting off the limbs. Right away, new ones grew, and like a body full of blood, some parts of it were always changing. Finally, he wanted peace and quiet, and the hope and thought of it helped him rest from his work. It was someone's wish that everyone else would reach their own goal. While standing with the Republic that was about to fall, Marcus Tullius Cicero was hounded by Catilinum and other uncertain friends. He went through storms apart with the Republic. Lastly, he didn't enjoy good things that happened and felt terrible when bad things happened. He hated many times that his consulship was praised, even though it had a good reason. These are the sad words he used in a letter to Atticus after Pompey lost and his son was fixing up the broken arms in Spain. "What am I doing here? I'm in my Tusculanus, half free." And he goes on to list more reasons why he hates the present, looks forward to the past, and fears the future. He called Cicero half free, and it really didn't fit him to have such a sad last name. Because a wise man is never half free. He always has full and solid freedom. And because he is free and enjoying his rights, he is better than others. And no one can control him who controls wealth. If someone is better than you, you should live with them all the time. Don't treat a slave any differently than you would want your boss to treat you. Chapter 6 is about Livius Drusus. Livius Drusus, a harsh and angry man, caused the new laws and the harms to Gracchus, with a large group of people from all over Italy supporting him. He didn't see the end of things coming and wasn't free to back out of them. He hated his life since he was a child and is said to have said that he was the only child who had never been unable to live as a slave. It was clear that his sudden audacity had to stop in a big way, because he complained that he hadn't had a day of peace, because he had been troublesome since he was a child and a burden on the courts. He also said that he wasn't sure if the wound in his groin was intentional or if it happened at the right time. It wouldn't be necessary to name many people who, while being seen by others as such apes, told the truth about themselves. But in their complaints, they didn't change themselves or others. Instead, they went back to their old ways of loving. What is certain is that even if we live to be 1,000 years old, our lives are cut short. Everything is used up in a century. This space of time, in which nature moves slowly but reason speeds it up, needs to escape us quickly because we don't slow down or stop the fastest thing. We just let it go as if it weren't necessary and could be recovered. I put those who are always busy except for wine and Venus at the top. Since these people are more easily fooled by the look of empty glory, they are the ones who sin boils under the cover of good. You talk about the hour of the greedy, the hour of the angry, and the hour of the fighters. These people sin more egregiously, but the stain of those who are drawn to pleasure and sexuality is less noticeable. Check out the days of these. Check out how much time they spend counting, following, being scared, and showing respect. And how much time they spend at their shows and other people's. You'll know that neither their bad things nor their good things are letting them breathe by how many treats they have already come to take for trade. Lastly, it is a well-known belief that people who are busy with these things can't do anything successful. This is because a narrow mind can't do great things. It just throws them out as useless, and a person who is busy with nothing has less control over his life than over himself, because the science of living is hard. I will tell you what real joy is and where it comes from. Having a clean mind, having good goals, doing good things, not caring about random things, living a life that always goes in the same direction. Chapter 7. How to Live a Good Life. There are many teachers of the other arts, and some, even very young children, have learned well enough to teach others. But the art of living must be studied for life, and learning how to die must be the most important part of that study. Giving up all of their worries, wealth, jobs, and fun activities, many great men were only interested in one thing until the very end of their lives: the art of knowing how to live. Many of them admitted that they had not yet reached this goal. So how can people who don't study it know it? Believe me, it's the work of great guys who are able to avoid making mistakes. Because they didn't let anyone take their time, they lived very long lives because everything that was extended was for them. They didn't let anything sit idle and undeveloped, and they didn't give anyone control over any part of their time because they saw it as a fair exchange, so they were very careful guardians of it, which was enough for them. Instead, it is important for those whose lives have been taken away by others, and don't think that they don't know that this cause has hurt them. Many of these people who are very happy will scream that they are not allowed to live in front of their workers, at work, or in other acceptable miseries. It's amazing that all the people who are close to you can take you away. Think about how many days the accused took away from you, the suitor, the old woman who was sick of burying her children, the person who pretended to be sick to get people who wanted his inheritance to be jealous, and the powerful friend who has you, not for friendship, but for show. Do yourself a favor and count the days of your life. You will be shocked at how few and useless the days you had for yourself have been. The other, who came to get the consulship he so desperately sought, wishes to leave it and asks, "When will this year be over?" For the rest, chance will take care of it herself, because his life is already safe. You can add to it or take away from it, but it won't happen. The dislike of time, which is the most valuable thing. If you see someone with grey hair and wrinkles and think, "He's been in the world a long time, but he hasn't lived long," you will say, "By chance he sailed a lot." Once he left the harbour, the rough storm took him from one place to another, and the fury of the opposing winds forced him to sail a lot in the same place. He went through a lot of pain, but he didn't sail for long. People who ask for time are easy to admire, but people who give time are hard to admire. Both types of people are focused on the task for which time is being asked, but not on the time itself. They treat what is asked and what is given with such low regard, as if it were not important. They are fooled because time is not a physical thing and can't be seen, so they think it is very pointless and useless. There are very wealthy guys who get the rewards of others, and they rent out their work, care, and hard work to others. But no one values time. They spend it wildly, as if it were something they were given for free. And if you look at them when they are sick and thinking about dying, as they do in the capital torture, you will see that they touch the knees of the doctors and say they would give up everything to save their lives. So different is the conflict of their feelings. And if we could remind everyone of how many years have passed, we could be sure of the ones that are still left for them. It's easy to forget things that are certain, even if they're small, but it's better to be extra careful with things they don't know when you'll run out of. Trust them, they know how valuable time is, because they often tell the people they love that they are willing to give them some of their years to show how much they care. Because they don't understand them, they give it to them, but they take it from themselves and don't give it to anyone else. But the loss of the damage they don't understand becomes easier to deal with as they ignore what they lose. Nobody can turn back the years, and no one will turn back your age either. It won't go back or stop. It will keep going in the same direction. It won't make any noise or let you know how fast it is going. His path will be quiet, and neither the orders of leaders nor the kindness of the people will slow him down. He will run from the beginning, as he was told, and he will not stop or stay anywhere. What is going to happen next? That life goes by quickly while you're busy, and when death comes, you have to leave whether you want to or not. Someone who has a lot wants more, which means they don't have enough, but someone who has enough has hit a point that the rich man never gets to. Chapter 9. Not being able to live in the present. If I'm talking about people who are proud of being smart, they will be able to live with more rest if they are more careful. They plan their lives by replacing and changing things in them, and they think about the future. Life's biggest loss is putting things off, so it takes away the first day and the things we have now, while giving us things we will have in the future. If you worry about what might happen tomorrow, it gets in the way of your present, and when you get rid of what is in luck's hands, you leave what is in your own. What do you aim for? What do you take yourself to? What will happen in the future is unknown, but you can live and remember that the greatest writers sang that wise line, "The best day of the first age is the first that flees to mortals." Why are you stopping? Why do you wait? If you don't use your time, it will go away. Even if you do use it, it will go away. But his speed is different, because it happens to him the same way it happens to travelers. They reach their destination before they realize they were close while they are talking, reading, or thinking. In this way, life is a fast-paced, ongoing trip that we all go at the same speed. Those who are sleeping and awake don't notice, but those who are busy will when it's over. Don't buy things just because they're handy. Things that you don't need are expensive, even if they only cost a penny. Chapter 10. The different times in life. There would be a lot of people who could use examples and reasons to show me that the life of the busy is very short. Fiano used to say, not about these professorial philosophers, but about the real and ancient ones, that to fight the passions, you had to be strong and not subtle. You had to push the fleet of the affections away with big blows instead of small ones, because light skirmishes aren't enough to undo it. Painful regret isn't enough to make people realize their mistakes. The present is very clear, the future is uncertain, and the past is certain. This is because the past is something that can't be changed, and fortune has already lost its right to it. Busy people don't enjoy the past because they don't have time to think about it. And if they do have time to think about it, it's unpleasant because they remember the bad times against their will, without having the guts to remember them, because the vices that with some flattery are one who has controlled his actions with a clear conscience and never lets himself be guiltily fooled is the only one who can happily think about the past life. But someone who has wanted many things out of ambition, despised them with sovereignty, and gained them with vileness, lied with trickery, stolen with avarice, and despised with prodigality, will always have to deal with his own memory. This part of the past is holy and dedicated. It is now free from all human events and the rule of luck. It is not poor, afraid, or battling different diseases. It cannot be disturbed or taken away because it is forever its own and free from worries. The current time is made up of only single days, and its presence is made up of instants. But the days of the past time will appear in your presence whenever you tell them to, willing to be held and lived in at your will. Being busy doesn't leave time for this examination, because only calm and quiet minds can think about their whole past life. Those who are involved feel like their minds are shackled. They can't look at themselves or turn their heads. Their life is flooded, and adding anything to it won't help, unless you leave out some small part that isn't important. To give them a lot of time, if they can't find a place to sit down and keep it, they will lose it and their heart. People say that there is no time because we live in a very short time. They say that time is always in a hurry and running, and before it stops being, it has already arrived, just like the orb and the stars, which move without stopping or resting. So, the busy ones only enjoy the present, which, is so short that they can't even comprehend it, and they lose track of even this time as they are busy with other things. Good luck doesn't reach far. It usually rests on the person closest to it. Chapter 11 is about meeting death. Do you finally want to know how little time they have left? See how much they want to live. Due to their vows, the old men in bad shape beg for a few more years to be added to their age. They boast about how young they look and tell lies to make them feel better, as if they were all lying to the Addos. But when an accident puts them in touch with their own death, they die scared, not as people who leave life, but as people who are shut out of it. They shout that they didn't know they didn't live, and that if they get over that disease, they will have to live in rest. Then they realize how pointless it was to buy things they won't enjoy, and how much excitement they wasted. However, what gets in the way of the lives of those who spend their time away from work, making no part of it last longer? It is used for different things. Nothing is wasted, nothing is given away, nothing is lost through carelessness, nothing is taken away by gifts, and nothing is useless. To put it another way, everything is paying off, so it's enough, no matter how small it is. What does it mean that every time the wise man's last day comes, he won't stop to take a conscious step toward death? To be happy, you have to fight your own desires and accept others. Chapter 12. Busy and not doing anything. You might ask me who I mean when I say busy. Please don't think that I'm only talking about people who need to be accompanied by dogs so they can leave the courts, and who think it's honorable when people follow them and rude when people don't. I'm also talking about people whose jobs require them to leave their homes and knock on other people's doors, and people who get rich from the judge's rod, which may lead to postima. There are people who spend their free time in their town or in bed, but even when they're alone, they're still a bother, so we shouldn't say that they have a restful life, just one filled with idle activities. You will call someone idle if they spend most of the day carefully cleaning the vessels of Corinth, which some people think is silly, and removing the rust from the musty metals. You will also call someone idle if they sit in the place of strife and watch the young men fight, because already grave evil, we are not only sick with Roman vices. To him who is mating his slaves' flocks, separating them by age and race, and to him who feeds the winners of the battle. Why do you call people who spend a lot of time with the barber restful, while he cuts their hair that grew out last night, while he gives them advice on any hair, while the stray hairs that come together from different sides are trapped, and while the barber cuts any hair that falls out again? They get angry like they're horny men, thinking they're more beautiful than honest. That's why you call them idle, since they're so busy with the comb and the mirror. For what? Will you say about people who work hard to write, hear, and learn tones, but break any rhythm and use a clear, good, and natural current instead of the voice that nature gave them? Those whose fingers are always making sun whenever they measure a line, those who hear a soft melody when they are told to do serious and sad things, all of these have no free time and are just doing nothing. Not only will I not let these guests join the idle times, but I will also watch them carefully arrange the sideboards and dress their servants. They are so interested in how the cook will cut up the boar, how quickly the pages will arrive at any signal, how skillfully the tastes will be carved into not ugly pieces, and how oddly the unhappy lads clean up the drunk's spittle. They do these things to try to become famous as strange and beautiful, and they stick to their vices so closely that they never drink or eat without a plan. People who are moved from one place to another in a chair or a litter should not be counted as idle either. People who go out to meet them at the times of the walk should not be counted. Another tells them when to wash, bathe, and eat. And it's all because they're in a good mood and hungry today, to say nothing of one of these delicate, if you can call it pleasure, things that don't care about men's lives and habits. He was taken out of the bath in arms and centaurs, who asked him if he was sitting. "Do you think this person, who doesn't care if he is sitting, knows if he lives, sees, or is idle? If I had to choose, I would feel worse about you ignoring him or pretending not to notice him. They don't pay attention to many things, and they act ignorant about many things. They like some vices and see them as proof of their happiness. This makes them think that only lowly men should know what they should do. You will say that poets have faked a lot of things to hurt the excesses, but believe me when I say that, it's much more what they don't say than what they do. In this sad century, just for this clever thing, they've faked so many horrible vices that we can now condemn them. There is a man who is so active that he needs to ask someone else if he is sitting. This person should not be called lazy. They should be given a different name. He's either sick or dead. If you know you're not doing anything, you are idle. But if you need someone to tell you about your body's movements, you are only half living. How sadness will rule over time, even if it's always right. Most of the time it's just being lazy. Being sad takes the least amount of work. Chapter 13. Attacks on knowledge that isn't useful. It's not worth mentioning all the people whose lives are ruled by dice, chess, the ball, or tanning in the sun. People who are happy and engaged in activities they enjoy are not idle, and there is no question that Romans who waste time studying letters for no reason are not idle, even though they get pretty tired. The Greeks thought it was rude to argue about things like how many oars Ulysses had, which book came first, the Iliad or the Odyssey, or whether they were both written by the same person. That being quiet doesn't help your guilt, and they said, don't give the view of someone smarter, but of someone more angry. He says that the Romans have become too interested in learning things that aren't important to them. I heard someone smart say that Drilus was the first person to win a military fight, and that Curio Dent was the first person to win with elephants. The news of these things doesn't point to real glory, but they do show how to handle social issues. I don't think their information is useful. It just makes us feel good about ourselves. Also, let us forgive those who want to know who convinced the Romans to start sailing. Claudius Candacegua was this person. Based on old tradition, the ships that carry the bastimentos are called caudicinctus, and the tables are called codices. It is okay to find out if Lucius Sulla was the first person to let lions roam freely in the arena. Before that, they were tied up, and if King Bocchus sent fletchers to kill them. But what good is it to know that Pompey was the first person to bring 18 elephants into the Colosseum and have them fight with the bad guys? According to legend, the prince of the city was the best prince ever. He was also very good, so he used a new way to kill people for feasts that people would remember. You should forget about these things so that a powerful man doesn't find out about them and be envious of your stupid pride. Oh, how he makes people totally unable to understand. I judge with great happiness the person who, at that time, lived in nature and put so many poor people at risk of being harmed by animals from other climates, who started wars between animals that were not equal, who gave so much and then, fooled by Alexandrian evil, killed himself by a filthy slave, knowing that his boast of his SBR name was empty. Going back to the point I was amusing myself with, I will show in another matter how some people work hard for no reason. The same wise man said that Metellus was the only Roman who carried 120 captured elephants in front of his wagon when he beat the Carthaginians, who had been beaten in Sicily. It wasn't until Quella's time that the Romans extended the walls around the city. Previously, the walls were only extended when new land was won in Italy, not when new land was won in the province. It's more important to know this than to check if the Aventine Mountain is out of the wave, which is what this same person said, giving two reasons. Either the plebeians moved away from it, or the birds that Remo talked to there did not look good, saying a lot of other things that are either lies or similar to lies. because even if you believe they write these things honestly and risk losing their credit, tell me what guilt this doctrine heals, what desires it challenges, and who it makes stronger, more just, and more liberal. Fabianus used to say that he wasn't sure if it would be better to not study at all or to get involved in these questions for oneself. Being able to handle hate is the first skill that people who want power should learn. Chapter 14. Spend your free time reflecting on wisdom. There are only those who enjoy peace and are too lazy to seek wisdom, and there are only those who live. They not only make the most of the time they have, but they also add to it by making the years that have already passed their own. We have to admit that those very clear creators of the holy sciences were born for our good and guided our lives with other people's work, even if it makes us feel bad. We are taught to know great things and brought from the dark into the light. We are welcome in all centuries, and if we are truly wise and want to leave the narrow confines of human stupidity, we will have plenty of time to scatter ourselves. We can argue with Socrates, stop Carneades, calm down with Epicurus, fight against our natural tendencies with the Stoics, push them forward with the Cynics, and walk with nature with people of all times. How? Do we not give our all to things that are huge and last forever, and talk to the best during this short and fleeting passage of time? When they've done all the stupid things they can and have gone from one office to another, bothering themselves and others, and have walked up and down every minister's threshold every day, into every open door they could find, and through every house they could find, how many people will they be able to see in such a huge city who are interested in different things? What will they find among them whose hopes, desires, or rudeness will make them leave? How many will tease them by making them wait and then fake being in a hurry to get away? How many people will run away through the secret fake doors instead of the crowded vestibules, as if it weren't more cruel to trick someone than to fire them? How many people, who are tired and heavy from being drunk the night before and can barely open their mouths, will repay the unhappy people who lost their sleep to keep someone else's? The greetings were always turned down, and only people who were actually working were interested. These are the people who always brag about having Zeno, Pythagoras, Democritus, Aristotle, Theophrastus, and other famous men in the good sciences as friends. No matter what, none of these will be busy and will fail to send their best and most loving selves to the person who comes to talk to them. Those who talk will never be able to leave without something. Anyone can go through the door at any time of day or night. From their talk, you will get what you want, and they will not give you anything more than they give you. How much more will you draw? What happiness and a proud old age await the person who has put his or herself in this person's care? He will have someone to talk to every day about his business, someone he can free himself from big and small problems, someone he can hear the truth from without being hurt, someone he can praise without being flattering, and someone whose ideas he copies. We often say that we couldn't have picked our own dads because luck gave us all of them. We can be born of our own free will because there are so many families with the best minds. Pick which of them you want to be added to, so that you will not only be added to their last names, but also get to enjoy the goods that aren't given to keep them with bad intentions and lowliness, since the quality of things goes up as they're shared more. These things will show you the way to eternal life and put you on a level from which no one else will ever come. In other words, this is the only way to make death last longer, or to put it another way, to turn it into life. It's very easy to undo the hours, memories, and everything else that desire either got rid of or filled up with companies. There is nothing that old age does not ruin, devouring more quickly what itself dedicated. Being wise means that no harm can come to you. The present age cannot erase it, and the next age will not make it less important. The one that is coming will instead add some reverence, because envy always lives in the close, and we respect what is farther away more deeply. This means that the smart man's life is not limited in any way, but has a lot of room for growth. No one else is free from human rules but him. As a god, he knows everything about all time. He remembers the past, learns about the present, and plans for the future. This union of all times makes his life long, while the life of those who forget the past, don't care about the present, and are afraid of the future is very short and full of sorrows. When they reach their death, the unfortunate ones realize too late that they were occupied for a long time in doing what in itself is nothing. Someone who is wise is reasonable. A reasonable person is always the same. Someone who is steady can't be moved. A person who is calm doesn't feel sad. A person who doesn't feel sad is happy. So, someone who is wise is happy. Chapter 16. People who don't know how to manage their free time and don't have enough proof that they lived a long life to show that they sometimes call death by torturing themselves, quit their jobs and burn in idleness without knowing how to get rid of it or make the most of it. So, they look for work, having just as much free time as they do without it, and this cycle continues. They hurry in the days in between because they don't want to wait for what they want to come. They think the delay is long because the time that those who love them think is short, and hasty is getting shorter because of their fault. They change their minds about what they want all the time. For these people, the days are not long, but troublesome. On the other hand, they think the nights are short, which they spend intoxicated or in bed with their girlfriends. This is where the poet's crazy ideas came from. They made up stories to make men look worse by saying that Jupiter, in love with Alcmene's adultery, had made the night longer. Putting the blame for bad behavior on the gods is nothing but encouraging them and using their example to let people off the hook for their sins. The nights may not seem so short to those whose costs are so high. The day goes by while they wait for the night, and the night is spent worrying about the next day. Even their pleasures make them nervous and frightened, with the thought of how short they will last, bringing up different worries. This love is where crying came from. Kings were scared of the end that was coming, because they were powerful and didn't have a lot of money to cheer them up. The arrogant Persian king spread his armies out over large areas of land and couldn't keep track of how many or how big they were. He shed tears as he thought that in 100 years, there would be no more young people like them alive, because the person who mourns them is the one who will kill them faster. He put the fear in the 100th year, after quickly killing some on land, some at sea, some in fight, and others in flight. I believe that the person who has lost the image of a good man out of loyalty to their morals is the one who values virtue the most and is most willing to follow it. Chapter 17. The fears of the powerful are their doubtful tastes, because they aren't built on sound ground. As a result, they fall apart with the same pride that made them start. What then will you say about those times, even if they say they were bad? Because there aren't many peaceful ones, even the ones where the being of men rises above the being of men. The best things in life are often the ones that make us feel bad, and we should never trust luck less than when it reveals its true self. We need another good luck to keep the good luck going and to promise that good things will last. Because everything that comes from luck is unstable, and things that have gone up are more likely to go down. What could break you doesn't make you happy. These things mean that the lives of those who work hard to get what they want in the top will be not only very short, but also very unhappy. With hard work, they get what they want, and they are eager to own what they have worked for. And with this, they don't care about the time that will pass, and they will never go back to their old jobs. They switch places again, one hope sparks another, and one goal leads to another goal. We don't want the work to end, but our rewards rise as the problem gets worse. They hurt us, but the more time we spend on other people's, the more time we have for our own. As soon as we finish the work of our pretense, we will begin the work of prayer. We give up the trouble of being lawyers and become judges instead. After finishing law school, he became a senior accountant. He got old as a soldier, took care of other people's property, and got pregnant with his own child. He gave Marius charge of the troops and took on the job of consul. They will take Quincio out because he wants to run away from the regime. Scipio will go from working the land to fighting in Africa. He won't be old enough for such a big adventure, but he will come back successful over Hannibal and Antiochus. He will do a great job as consul and back up his brother's job. He will be on the same level as Jupiter if he doesn't stop it. They will also bother this person, who was guardian of the fatherland, with civil seditions. And someone who knew how to turn down awards when he was younger will enjoy the goal of being banished for a long time when he is older. There will always be reasons to care, whether they are happy or sad. With jobs, the door shuts, always wanting but never getting it. The only tree that is strong and stable is the one that gets hit by the wind a lot. Chapter 18. The hassles and risks of having an office. So, O pure Pauline, stay away from the vulgar and look for a better port. And don't be like an old person who is tossed around. Remember the waves you've crossed, the storms you've been through, and the ones you made your own because you were public. Enough signs of your virtue have been given during troublesome and stressful times. Feel what it does now when it's quiet. Thank you for giving the country the better part of the last few hundred years. Also, set aside some time for yourself. And I don't want you to be lazy and do nothing, or to hide your good intentions in sleep or pleasures that common people enjoy. Because that's not rest. You will be able to retire and find more important jobs than the ones you've had so far. You will be able to manage the empire's money with the grace of a foreigner, the care of a parent, and the honesty of a public official. It's not easy to stay hate-free in the job where you get love. But trust me when I say that reading about your life is safer than reading about the stock of the public wheat. Do not give yourself that mental strength that can help you do great things, and stay away from that service that, while wonderful, is not right for a perfect life. And try to convince yourself that all the science classes you've had since you were a child weren't given to you so that you could take care of thousands of bags of wheat. Instead, you were given bigger and better things. There will be plenty of jobs for guys with the right skills and a strong work ethic who can carry heavy things. The late donkeys are a better fit than the fine horses, whose giving lightness is there to lift it up with heavy weight. Just think about how much trouble it is to put you through such a care. Your job is like a person's stomach. It doesn't allow for reason or fairness to be applied, because hungry people don't get full by begging. Some days after Caligula died, it must have been very hard for him to die and live at the same time, if there is such a thing in hell. Wherever the Romans were still living, Rome had enough food for 7 to 80 days. While he was making bridges with ships and messing around with the empire's armies, he made food shortages the last bad thing that happened to the trapped. In order to be like a vengeful foreign king, poor Superb had to go through loss and famine, which leads to the end of everything. What would those who were supposed to provide the people with food think if they were instead given iron, stones, fire, and swords? They hid a lot of evil in their hearts, and they didn't do it for no reason. There are many diseases that can be fixed while the sick don't know about them, and there have been many people whose deaths were caused by knowing about their disease. The world's total unity comes from a spontaneous gathering of things that don't go together. Chapter 19. An invitation to a good time off. If you're in charge of making sure that the wheat gets to the granaries without being ruined by fraud or carelessness on the part of the people who carry it, and that it doesn't get damaged by humidity or heat, Do you think that it's the same job as making sure that these holy and wonderful things reach the nature of the gods? What happiness, prosperity, or event does your soul look forward to? Where will nature put us when we are no longer in our bodies? What is it that keeps all the heavy things in the world going? What drives fire to the sky and stars to move along their paths? Are you ready to leave this world and look with understanding at these higher ones? So, those who are strong will walk while their blood is still hot. If you live this way, you might learn a lot of the good sciences, love and practice virtue, forget about pleasures, master the art of living and dying, and finally find peace of mind. People who are busy are all unhappy, but those who don't own the jobs they do are especially miserable, which has been argued in court. Do not wish them well. All of that is bought with the price of death, and only the year of their consulship is kept. They will waste all of their years on many things. Others, after a thousand humiliations at the top of their dignity, are crushed to find that all their hard work was for a marker on the grave. These people have given up on the age and fought with principles to reach the top of their desire. For some, hopelessness is the tired old age, while for others, youth is a time of serious and crazy attempts to find new dreams. To do anything, we need to talk to our friend first, to see if it's possible. Chapter 20. Have a good retirement. A stupid person is one who, in old age, is taken by death while busy with the business of unknown claimants and looking for praise from common people. And awkward was the person who died while working because he was tired of living instead of working. It's funny that the sick man's eager son laughs at him while he's busy with his books. I can't think of a good model to set. Someone called Turanius was very responsible and timely. Because he was over 90 years old, Caligula fired him as procurator without him asking for it, and then he told himself to lie in bed and his family to mourn him as if he were dead. The house was sad about the death of its old owner, and the sadness didn't go away until his work was given back to him. It is very respected to die in the line of duty. People who think this way often feel like they want to work more than they can. Even though their bodies aren't working right, they fight it without seeing old age as a problem. On the other hand, some titles more than because it keeps them from the work. The law doesn't force the fighter to wait 50 years or the senator to wait 60. It's harder for men to find rest from themselves than from the law. And while they are taken away or carry others away and steal each other's peace and make each other unhappy, they live a life without any fruit, pleasure, or mental gain. None of them look forward to death. Instead, they all look forward to what the future holds. Some of them even plan for what will happen after they die. So, those whose deaths mark the beginning of their own reign use their own deaths. People who are getting old should know that they can choose how to die or live, and that there are things they can do to relax without being unhappy. And don't want to work when you're 80 years old, just like you didn't want to work when you were 50. Chapter 21. To know when to stop. If people who are getting old already don't question their life, and people who are old enough to suffer it want to live, then they can be excused by either. But you stupid ones, he makes himself an unhappy old age with the worries of old age, and he wastes his few remaining years by wanting them to last longer. What do you want to know? When yourself didn't know how to make the most of the first, shouldn't nature give you a second chance at life? For some, life ends at birth, for others in childhood, for many in youth, and for still others, it ends when they get white hair. These people are the worst, but they are also the most guilty. No one loves life more than someone who knows they will die soon. And why is taking care of older people so hard? Because we don't think we'll live for a long time. If someone doesn't have any hope, they don't worry, they don't count the days and hours they have left, and they don't worry about losing what they no longer hope for. But who is it that is fooled by this expectation? The man who is old enough to enjoy it. The age when you know you're going to die is the age when you know you can't enjoy the days. The more a man clings to life, the more he needs to let go of it. Oh, that was such a silly mistake. The drive to live at age 80 and the focus on work at age 90. People who need someone else to take care of their bodies or other people's things shouldn't feel bad about it. If you make fun of old age and you want the old to know that they will be thankful to you tomorrow, then stop before old age makes you quit. Check out how stupid the learned man was. He taught everyone how to enjoy old age. He talked positively about life, pretended to be at ease while being cared for, and said that the future was certain. So, the person who first praised old age can't leave work because he loves life. Oh, nature, how have we seen men who are smarter than the ones who gave you life make this mistake? Chapter 22. Getting pleasure from retirement. So, O Paulinus, you need to let go of these worries that come with getting old and welcome old age into your life. If life is good and attractive, then what is better than getting old? When something is bad, why not end it faster? If you think it's valuable, when else is the right time to get rid of it after a man has done what's right? First, look at this case study. You've never thought the sun was peaceful at dawn or dusk. When you look at the rising sun in the morning, you'll say it's better. And when you look at where it goes down at night, you'll say it's calmer. Also, O Pauline, I want to tell you that life is good if you know how to live it well. I have to tell you that getting older makes me happy. I have only talked about myself in this whole speech. That's because I've never been interested in being in the spotlight. If I could get what I want, I wouldn't want to be a part of life itself. I have never wanted to have a secretary, clients, or staff. I never looked for something to do, only things not to do. I also never used my own words to praise, only real words to give. They wouldn't show up on their own, so I didn't give them any advice of my own. Instead, I was afraid of theirs. Even though I was aware of taunts, I didn't want to punish those who said them. I have given a lot of myself, but all that I could give was myself. I've dealt with getting old in a way that makes it look like I've gained time instead of losing it. I've given up everything I needed to do to wait for the day of the kingdom of the world, which is coming quickly. I'm not doing what I envy those who do it. How many hours did I work? I would die in peace if I lived my old years the same way I lived them. Someone else's ideas were more important to me than my own, and I valued them both while I was living and after I died. And who wouldn't want to live so long, more than 80 years, when they don't want to be a ruler or a commoner? There was a Gracchus in Rome, and I received him even when I was by myself.